We're on.
That's it? It's the start?
We're on.
We're starting. All right, everybody. Welcome to Matt Tong's first podcast, first episode.
We got to do...
I'm doing the intro, actually. It's my podcast.
It's your
then today, our guest is Matt Tong. Matt Tong is a bit of a the Swiss knife of the mountain bike world.
Yeah, I guess.
Mechanic, photographer, rider.
Biker, marketing.
Bar marketing, podcast. He kind of does everything.
Can you tell I have ADHD?
The guy is a bit crazy.
Jan, welcome.
Thank you.
Episode one of workshop season. This is fun.
Workshop season is even is as fun. A name.
Yeah, I had to. Can't start with nothing.
It's true.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
We've been talking about that for quite a while now.
Since November.
Yeah. And probably started after you wrecked yourself.
Yes.
And you were probably looking at things to keep you engaged and keep your mind occupied. Creativity.
Yes. Well, there was no occupation in my mind for a long time. It was just empty.
Cool.
You had a gnarly crash last year as well.
Yep.
For people listening, if you could go back to the moment before your crash in Quebec, what's one thing you'd known about concussions, recovery, yourself, anything that you know now on the other side of it?
Well, if I go back before my crash and I think about concussions, I pretty much knew nothing. I knew about concussions. I knew that, you know, they existed, and there was more and more awareness about concussion and this type of injuries in the mountain bike world and in any type of sport. Everything has started to really came out quite recently. In the last 5 years, we've been talking more about concussions.
Less. For me, the first memory that I have of people taking it really seriously, other than Geordie, was when Tani Seagrave took she 6 months off the World Cup.
And she was quite open about it.
Yes.
Yes.
That for me is the first memory I have of people being open. This is a concussion. You actually need to recover
Exactly. Yes. So for me, I knew all these things, but I've never really been through a big concussion like I had last year. And so I was pretty unaware, actually, about the effects and everything. And so it's been, it's been a bit of a gnarly experience in a way, but so fulfilling in a way, and quite interesting to learn and to move through and to get better, you know, to recover from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I did the same thing. I knew nothing. I mean, I knew what a concussion was.
Exactly.
And everyone's like, oh, you have a concussion. I think I had one at Crankworx a couple of years ago. Yeah. I didn't realize I was concussed for about 10 days.
When you did the container?
That was that week. That was the Thursday before Crankworx.
Yeah.
And then I raced all week. We went on a group ride with Dakine. We did a bunch of stuff. And then I got to the bottom of my Canadian Open run on the Sunday, and I didn't remember my race run. And I'd been red flagged, and the marshal at the bottom said to me, hey, you've got to go and redo your run. And I was like, what? And he's like, your run. And I was like, what run? And he was just like, are you okay? And I'd crashed in practice that morning as well. Yeah, yeah. I broke a crank off my bike and I think knocked my head again. And then I was like, oh, maybe I need to go to the hospital.
Yep.
And I went to the hospital and ended up then... I still only took 4 weeks off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so back riding in September.
You probably needed to take more.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, see, it's gnarly. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
It's gnarly, and then it's hard to actually listen to the the signs really at the beginning. It's hard to know what's happening and stuff. If I go back, I crashed, and then. The first few weeks after, I thought that my brain was actually okay, and I was really focused on my hand. That was my big injury, really. Mm-hmm. And it's really at some point that that I've realized that my brain was not fine, and I was really like doing some really big like mood swings, like big ones. And then when I was going down, like I couldn't stop myself going down, like spiraling down, like in negative thoughts, and it was bad. Like it was really it was bad. I didn't have any like dizziness, vision was good, hearing was good, my balance was good, everything was good in this sense, but it's really like mentally that I struggled the most.
Did you have, within a close vicinity of the crash and then the after, do you have like a clear memory of realizing what happened, or is it like weeks after that you really had a coherent thought where you were like, oh, okay, I just had a huge crash?
Well, no, right away. Like it's like really when I came back to myself, because I was out for a few minutes, and really when I came back to myself, I had no, I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember my name. I couldn't remember the people that were around me, who they were. I couldn't remember where I was, the date. I couldn't, it was a very, like even the concept of like the planet Earth and where we are, it was very foreign. Like I had no clue of anything. And I knew in that moment, I was in the river, wet, I was cold, and people around me were quite looking a bit concerned. I knew that it was bad, that I had a bad accident. And then few minutes later, like maybe half an hour, when the medics arrived and everything, that's when I started to realize. I was like, okay, well, that's where I am. I'm in Quebec. I'm in the river. I crashed. I'm not good.
Yeah.
I knew right away that I was going through like a long. It was going to be a long recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you had that like overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think about my most recent concussion, and I try and think back on how the day was for me. And I think I can remember like three frames of a memory.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was one of those days where probably shouldn't have been trying to ride the last lap of the day.
Yeah.
Or do what I was trying to do. Did you have a similar experience? Was it like you were having an off day, or do you remember the day? Were you riding well?
First of all, like I was going through, we organized the camp in the Sea to Sky with Nate. We had 15 people. That was a full week camp. The weekend before, I raced the BC Cup downhill. A bunch of coaching before that. And I was tired. I was really exhausted about the full thing. And then for me, I was going to Quebec in like the idea of like, okay, we're going to visit the Vinci factory. We're going to have a good time. I'm going to be with Steve. We're going to have a blast. And I will feel better as we go through the thing. Steve, at the same time, before the trip in Quebec, had a very nasty call at work. So Steve is a firefighter, a big accident. He went to it, and like a bunch of like PTSD, was not feeling really good at all. Go to Quebec. And then the night before the accident, Steve didn't sleep at all. And we were like, well, the morning, we're like, dude, you need to take care of yourself today. And just stay home, talk to a counselor, like process the accident, process everything. And then we go out with the DaVinci crew, the filmers and everything. And I'm just going to go and I'm going to ride for you. So I went to Vallée-Bras du Nord in Quebec, really with the energy of like, okay, Steve is not here and I'm going to send it for Steve-O. And that day, I was riding like full gas, like the way I do, like
no brakes,
just full on, like really charging, and good energy. Like the crew was pumped, and then I knew that we were going to get to that section just beside the river. Something that we saw on like some of Remy's video, like Lewis Buchanan on Instagram, and I knew that this section was going to come. And as soon as we started to hear the river, I was like, okay. This is it. We are getting closer. So I put my bike on the side. We've been filming for like 4 hours already. getting tired. And then I walked down the section just to scope it out. And then I saw, like, the first thing I saw is that gap from the rock, missing the bridge, basically gapping over the river and then basically landing on the other side. Not a massive gap, like maybe 5 meters tip to tip, something that we've done. You know, like, it's the kind of things we do. Precise takeoff, precise landing. The line was clear, like everything was kind of lining up. The only thing that I didn't really notice or pay attention to is there was a crack on the rock and there was a little puddle. And I thought that the crack was really maybe 2 inch or 1 inch deep, but the puddle was actually pretty deep. And when I went full gas, my front wheel got caught in the thing. And like I didn't see it coming at all. Huh? It just
lights out.
Yeah, just gone. But I remember as I was pushing my bike up, I remember thinking about, I'm a bit tired right now. Maybe I should have a little snack. Maybe we should wait a little bit and I can take a break and then do it in half an hour when I'm a bit more rested. Maybe I should have a little bit of some water. Maybe today I should have a full face on. I didn't have a full face. I didn't have my knee pads as well. Like I... Really, the bunch of things that came to my mind, but at the same time, I know that, like, I've been racing all my life, and then especially with enduro, is that as you go through the day in enduro, you get more tired, and then sometimes you're at the end of the day, and you have a stage that's like 7 minutes long, and it's the last stage of the day, and then I was able always to like put everything on the side. And focus, put all my focus in those 7 minutes and I make it through. Even if I'm exhausted mentally, physically, I can make it happen. So for me, focusing for 30 seconds, even if I'm tired, I can put everything on the side and do the thing. I get the job done. And that was a bit my mindset. I was like, you know what? I'm going to muscle through it. I'm going to focus through the thing and I'm going to get it done. So I went up there, dropped in, pam, ate done. Shit, gone. Yeah, oop, done. Blackout. See, gone. So even if, like, that's a bit my realization with, like, all these things is that, you know, like, of course, we say, oh, injuries are part of the game and it's meant to happen and stuff. But it's like when it happens, it sucks for sure. But it's also like even if in our job and what we do is that even if everything lines up perfectly, everything is in the green light and you know your line, you understand the line, you understand the process, everything is lined up perfectly. If you eat shit, you're gonna really severely hurt yourself.
Yeah, the ground doesn't apologize.
Exactly, yeah. The trees are not moving and the rocks are there, like everything is there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's with the things we do at the speed we go, there's no way, there's really no way around it.
No.
So... Anyways, I went a bit on the rant. But I mean,
where did you seek help straight away after the crash? Did you take a bit of time? Where did you go? Who did you see?
But so right after the crash, my main thing was really again, it was my hand and my head was sliced open. But really my focus was not my concussion. Like my focus was my hand, my area. My hand is still not good. Huh? My finger is still not like perfect, but it doesn't bother me riding my bike, which is cool. And it really took me 4 weeks to understand that I was badly concussed. Maybe even more actually, because I had my crash June 27, and it's really just after Crankworx. I think the week after Crankworx or 2 weeks after Crankworx. That I sucked.
You sucked, yeah.
I sucked for help. What do you say? Like
You sought help.
I went to the doctor.
We speak great English on this podcast.
But yeah, and it's like I knew that I was always saying I have some like kind of my mood is a bit affected and stuff, but I never thought that I was really like concussed badly. And really during Crankworx, that's when like the mood swings were really starting to get deeper and deeper. And 2 weeks after Crankworx, I was, so that was like 5 weeks after my crash. 6 weeks after my crash. And I was in my yard. I was doing some yard work. It was actually a funny story. Like the ground was so dry and I rented a tiller. You know a tiller? Like that machine to like move the dirt. Mm-hmm. And I rented one at Saber in Whistler. Brought it back home. The machine was like a monster. It was so fucking dangerous.
It was just and you're just like concussed.
Bouncing everywhere in the dust, in the sun, like 40 degrees. It was crazy. And then one day, like Jen goes to the lake with a friend and the kids, and she goes, and then I'm at home. I'm doing the tiller in the sun and stuff. And I lost it completely. I don't know why. I completely lost it. I was like, I'm done with shit. I'm leaving. And usually I'm someone that's like kind of, I see the positive a lot. Like I'm a pretty positive person and I see the positive in like any sort of situation, even like the most negative stuff. I'm still going to see the positive because it's a learning experience and everything. And then I found myself like really like spiraling down like negative thoughts. And then I couldn't stop it. Like I was really like getting deeper and deeper and deeper into those dark thoughts. I left my house. It was really getting stormy. And I went to the Duffy and I climbed up Mount Roar, hiked up there, got to the top. The storm was coming, the lightning was coming and everything. And I was like really calling for the lightning to strike me. I was like, come on, get on my own, like crazy. And at some point I was like, okay, Johan, like the storm is already coming. Get the fuck out. Went down there. And then, you know, like usually I go in the forest and then you go on your bike ride or you go for a hike in the woods and then you feel better. Like I release everything, go back home and I feel better. But then that day, like nothing really was helping. And then I came back home and I was still charged. I was not feeling good. And then we had a chat with Jen and then I was really, and then Jen looked at me and she said, Johan, you're not acting like yourself at all right now. And she said, I think your brain is damaged. There's something that's not good. And so she booked me to a doctor appointment. At the same time, I went to see a counselor in Whistler, processed the full accident, the full thing, basically. Did some breath work at the same time, craniosacral, did a lot of things basically at the same time to get better. Took some low-dose antidepressant as well for like 6 weeks, pretty much. And things started to get better. But I really, it took me a while to seek for help. And then I think there's probably a bunch of people that are, you know, that are concussed and going through the same kind of stuff. And they actually don't seek help. And now I understand how, you know, like, what was it? Was it Dave Mirra mm-hmm. who committed suicide? Yep. Was it Dave Mirra?
Yep. He had post-concussion traumatic syndrome or whatever they call it, CTSD.
Yeah, and then these are the kind of things that you hear about and you're like, oh, like this person concussed, committed suicide. But then it's really when you, like for me to go through it, that I was like, oh my God, like if I don't do anything for myself right now, I could actually get there. And that was, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Oh yeah.
And then that's what I say to my doctor as well. That's what I say to my doctor, to my counselor. And that's, I was really honest with it. I was like, this is how I feel right now. I need help.
Did you, other than Jen, did you have any friends, fellow athletes, family, be like, hey, Johan, you'd smoked yourself on a rock. You almost drowned in the river. Like, you need to go get your brain checked? Or was it literally just yourself up until that 5-6 week period? And do you think it maybe hindered your recovery waiting that long, or do you think it was so bad that it didn't matter?
Yeah, I don't know. Like at the beginning, people were really like, you definitely were out for like a long time, and my head was open. I had 3 brain bleeds as well. So for sure, I was concussed. There was no way around it. But for me, the symptoms were not really like in my face. So I was like, I'm fine. You know, I was like, there was no, like I was, again, I was not getting dizzy. My vision was good. My hearing was good, but everything was good. So it's hard to be like, oh, I'm feeling a bit depressed right now. It's my concussion. You know, like if it was hard for me to like put the finger at it. It's really, it took me to go down deep in like spiraling down that I was like, okay, there's definitely something wrong with me right now. Yeah.
What were your biggest mental hurdles stepping away from riding? If you're like me, I'm completely dopamine addicted to my bike. I need to ride to like have that. Oh, I'm stressed. I need to like release some energy. How did you manage not having that?
Well, I think by keeping, well, no matter what, I have a life. I have a pretty busy life with the kids and like we just moved in Pemberton as well. So there's a bunch of stuff to do in the house as well. So I think just keeping myself a little bit busy and I, like it's hard for me to actually do nothing. Like I always feel like I need to do stuff. Otherwise, I'm not like, I don't know, like I feel like I'm not like, I don't know, like I'm not worth it or like I don't know. It was, but I, yeah, I don't know.
Did you struggle with like an identity loss almost?
Not too much on this one. No, not too much on that because I knew that I was going to come back. You know, like it's easy to, well, maybe actually, maybe at the beginning, like talking to Steve, I remember like at some point, like I didn't know if I was going to do any of the like gnarlier riding. Like I was like, really, I don't know if I'm going to have a mental block. I don't know if I'm going to, I knew that I was going to have mental blockages, but I didn't know where it was going to happen. And, but I was quite open-minded with that. I knew that I was going to go and get on my bike again soon. Like it was not, my hand was a bit of an issue, but again, it was getting better. And, I knew that at some point I was going to ride. If you have a really, like I'd say like an earlier injury, like you, and you can't bike anymore at all, then that would be a different story for sure. But for me, it was like, okay, I'm gonna be biking again at some point soon.
Did you have any uncertainty at all? You knew you were coming back. Did you have to set alternative goals to like get you there? Did you have any like processes that you used to like not let your mind wander after you realized you were concussed?
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
So you didn't go through any phase of not knowing. You knew you were going to be back on the bike.
Yes.
Did you have a way? Did you have coping mechanisms? Did you do any goal setting? How did you get to the point where you were like, okay, I can start thinking about riding my bike again? Because for me personally, I know that concussion road is a long one.
Yes, sir.
Like I've just been through 5 months of it as well. And I've had to, goal settings worked really well for me. I give myself little things to achieve and I'm like, okay, if I do that one thing, it's 1% and then I'm like that much closer.
Exactly. So I think when you are injured, like if you just think about, let's say that it's like as an athlete, you think about, you know, you grow and everything and you're like, okay, one day I want to be a world champion. If you just think about that, then it's going to be hard to actually notice all the little steps that are making you go to that ultimate goal at the end. So it's the same with the concussion or like an accident. You going back on the bike is the ultimate goal. But before that, there's so many little steps that needs to happen and little victories, actually, to make it go there. So I think that's pretty much what you're saying. Yeah? So like, going to a counselor to do processing the accident and like releasing a bunch of like trauma or like thoughts or whatever, boom, that's a little victory. Going to the physio and being able to like bend your finger here to right here, that's another victory. It's like all a bunch of little things that you need to do to get you there. And I think these are really important. And I think it's actually cool. Like I think when you have an injury like that, and that you know that you are gonna go back on your bike at some point, there is so much learning that happens. Mm-hmm. There's so much learning, and I think it actually feels good. You know, like it's actually sometimes it's a, I take injuries like it's a reset. You boom. You depending on your injury, sometimes it's a big reset. But then it's always a bit of a, it's a moment where, okay, well, maybe it's time to like question yourself a little bit, the things you do, and to just remodel the things you do. And that's also what I did a lot. Like I remodeled my career with my coaching and all these things. I remodeled a bunch of things, which was super interesting to do.
So the creativity, having time to take time, exactly. Essentially
you being forced to take time. And it's also a gift. Because again, like same as you, like we never actually take time to, we always go. But then having like being forced to take time for yourself and to think a little bit differently is super beneficial. And I think it's actually, sometimes it's life is smart. Huh? It kind of something, it puts us in the right direction.
Universal reality.
Exactly.
Check.
It's like trust the universe. Well, yeah. If the universe is getting me to do that, then I'm going to follow that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you struggle at all staying off your bike and off the trails and out of an area where you could perhaps be coerced onto your bike when you got to a point where you're like, okay, I feel kind of normal, but yeah. I still have, you know, a month or 2 months before I realistically should be riding my bike. Did you struggle with not? I mean, I saw you posting on Instagram. You were riding around on your e-bike doing wheelies one-handed. I was there. I was like, go on, you probably shouldn't be doing this. Was that a day-to-day? Did you struggle with that every day? Or was it only like in certain scenarios?
I think at the end, you know, like the closer you get to the goal of being able to ride your bike again, that's when it gets really hard because you're like, oh my God, I think I can do it, but at the same time, I should not be doing it. And I've experienced that also, not with a concussion, but like a couple years ago when we were at Triad Fiesta and I broke my two wrists and wrecked my two shoulders. And I think we were filming with Nate in Squamish.
Yes.
And I still had my cast.
Yes.
And at some point at the end of the day, I was like, Nate, give me your bike. And then I was starting to ride down the trail and I was like, oh my God, this feels so good. And then I knew that I was not supposed to do that, but it's like the temptation. So of course you don't want to push it too hard. And I think that's super important to actually like be patient. Like be patient and not rush the process. Otherwise, that's when actually when things can get even gnarlier.
Does social media make that hard? Do you think? Do you get the FOMO bug when you're injured? I mean, everyone.
A little bit, for sure. Huh? For sure. It's also our job to post constantly and to you know. So we have a bit these things of you want to stay relevant in a way. And taking some time off is hard for that as well. We all have deliverables and we all have these things to do on social media. And it's for sure, it's hard to when you have like contract signs and you have a certain amount of deliverables to do for your partners and you can't do it. And if you have to renegotiate contract at the end of the year, it's hard. And then keeping the creativity and keeping things fresh when you are injured, it's hard. My job is to ride my bike. It's not to do a little dance on social media with my bike. Like that.
I don't. We're not naming names.
I don't do that.
Did you?
Or test the flexibility of the bike. It was beginning. No, I'm just
We love you, Lou. We do. Did you? You never struggled keeping the passion you have for mountain biking alive, no. I'm sure. Did you have to find other ways to stay connected with your community? I know social media, the flip side of that is it helps a lot.
Yeah.
And you're a pretty community involved guy anyway.
Yeah.
What other things did you use to like help yourself stay, not necessarily relevant, but involved?
But it was one thing that was really powerful, I felt, is when I started to gently ride again with my e-bike, and by the way, the same thing, e-bike, I'm saying we were talking about e-bikes, but when you are injured, an e-bike is actually super, super beneficial. Like for me, like going up the hill in Pemberton is super steep, and I tried at first with my normal bike, and the heart rate was going up, and the blood flow was going through the brain, and I was getting completely out of it. The e-bike was able to keep me following a certain pace and my heart rate a bit low. And it was amazing for me to go back on my bike, get up there in the mountain, find some fresh air, beautiful viewpoints, taking like 15 minutes up there, just like quiet on my own and being like, oh my God, I'm riding again. Even if it was just up the road, down the road at the beginning, it was amazing. And what I felt needed for me was to actually share this experience with people and to completely openly talk about the struggles and everything of the concussion with my audience on social media. And the response was actually super, super powerful. And I felt like, wow, I'm actually connecting with people without doing gnarly stuff, talking about real things, about life, what I'm going through right now. And so many messages from people saying that they are going through the same thing and they are not getting better and asking me, what am I doing to feel better and all these things. And it was amazing. Like I found myself having conversations on the phone with random people about concussions and trying to help them, like randomly. It was amazing. It was really, really powerful.
Do you think there's, looking on the medical side, do you think there's a lack of information about concussion recovery? I know a lot of athletes I've spoken to about concussions, they have no idea where to look.
No.
Like there's not a lot of information out there short of like three articles on Google or whatever. Yeah. And if you want to go to the doctor, I mean, especially in North America, if you don't have benefits, it's really expensive.
Super expensive.
It's super expensive. Yeah. Do you think there's also like a bit of a stigma around concussions being one of those injuries where athletes have to just blow it off and be like, oh, I just knocked my head, it's fine. Yeah. I'm not broken anything. I'll be back soon.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely that. The problem with concussions is that you don't see it. Like it's not something that you see.
No.
So it's just weird. Like, you know, like sometimes it's like same again for me. Like it was really hard for me to put the finger at it and be like, this is actually from my concussion. Mm-hmm. It's hard. And for sure, as you say, there is definitely a lack of openness sometimes from the riders and the pro athletes to simply talk about the struggles of an injury. Like, of course, it's part of the game again, eh? But it's how gnarly it can be sometimes, how isolating it can be.
You're in your most vulnerable state.
Yeah.
When you're injured, let alone concussed or concussed and injured.
But like if you think as what we are saying, like we are, the two of us, we are always on the go. Like we are always doing stuff. And I think that most of the mountain bikers, pros and non-pros that are like really into mountain biking, we are all the same. We are all go, 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 go. And then all of a sudden, you get hurt and you can't do any of that. So you're like, all your brain chemicals and even if you don't have a concussion, so like all your chemicals are completely unbalanced. Your adrenaline, dopamine, everything is bloop. Like what's happening? You're completely cut from that. So that's not good. Huh? You feel like shit.
Yes.
Definitely not. You don't feel good at all. Plus you really cut from your community. It's super, it's depressing. It's really, there is no overworld. It's super depressing. So focusing on all these little things, all these little victories, it's super important, I think, first of all. But then also being honest with it, like being honest with sharing your experience and being like, well, this is what I'm going through right now. Because if we are actually on this platform, sharing all the beautiful moments and all the gnarly things that we do and the victories and everything, but this platform should actually be also to share the thing, our struggles. And I think that's from my experience, I think I connected more with people sharing my struggles than any of the other gnarly things that I've done.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. it's kind of funny.
Everybody can ride gnarly features.
More and more.
Not a lot of people can be really open and honest with themselves when they're super, super injured.
Yeah.
And actually recognize and be like, hey, I need to take a second here, I think. And maybe invite other people to be like, hey, are you also struggling with this thing?
Exactly.
Maybe we can like go through this together instead of it being a really isolating experience.
Exactly. And then you really create some sort of a community within that, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's super important. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
When you sought medical help,
yep.
what were the avenues offered to you in terms of recovery? What was the diagnosis they gave you? How did they teach you to deal with it? What did they offer you in terms of recovery, whether it be medicinal, therapeutic, seeing a counselor, physio?
That was really up to me. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Like, it was really, there was not anyone really telling me, you should go see a counselor and you should go see a doctor and you should do some breath work and you should take this medicine. It was really, I went to my doctor because I knew that something was going wrong and I had 3 brain bleeds and I was like, okay, there's definitely a follow-up that needs to be done here. But at the same time, I knew that also I was having like flashbacks of the wood of the bridge coming to my face and hearing the sound of it, like really having vivid flashbacks of a bah, like that. So I was like, okay, there's definitely something for me to process. And talking to someone is going to be someone that's neutral in the situation. Counselor is really beneficial because I've talked to counselor like in some for some other things in my life, and it's always beneficial. And then for me also, I feel like doing breath work is something super super powerful, and I release a lot of traumas, if you want to call them like that, or like whatever emotions or things like that, just through the breath. And I have someone in Squamish, Zach, he's amazing. I trust him completely. And then I know that all the time when I go see him, we have really wild experiences. So we actually talking about that, I'm going to go a little bit deeper on that. The first session that I did with Zach after my accident, so it was like maybe 6-7 weeks after my accident, I told him, I said, Zach, I actually don't know if I was dead for a little bit or not. I was like, I have this feeling that I might have been gone. Like I might have been dead and then I came back a little bit, you know, like for how long, I don't know. And then we did with breathwork session where I completely saw myself leaving the room where I was, lying down on the floor, leaving the room and then coming back to the moment of before the accident, riding down my bike through the waterfall down there in Vallée Bras du Nord, crashing, sliding into the river at first, laying down on my back, coming back to myself. And then I don't know actually if the moment where I came back to myself and came back into the room was actually like if my soul actually came back into the room at that moment. So if my soul was gone for like 6-7 weeks and then came back, like it was a really weird kind of experience, but I really felt that after the session I was back. Like I was like, okay, Johan, I've processed it and I'm back and I feel better now. There was such a big relief of energy in a way. And everything after, you know, like going to the doctor, doing my therapy with my counselor, doing really a lot of sessions, breath work with Zach, talking, being open to my audience on social media and everything started to come back and I started to feel better. Everything really started to ramp up and I was starting to be able to ride my bike again and gently feeling like myself. It was really super powerful. So it was a bunch of like things that I did that helped me. And then I think that in this kind of situation, when you are injured and then sometimes you're like, you're really struggling, try things, just go for it. I did craniosacral as well. Like I've never really done that. But then same thing. Like I finished some session. I was like, oh my God. Like it felt like I did nothing, but I feel better.
Explain that process. What's involved? What's involved in that?
With craniosacral? I actually don't know. You lie down and then the person is just like moving, touching your head. and they move like, I don't know, fluids and things in your head, like gently, methodically. And then you really have some cool like release of same thing, release of energy. I actually talked to Miranda Miller. I saw her at sushi in Squamish randomly. And then I say, hey Miranda, how are you? Blah blah blah. And she's like, oh, I'm actually not good. My neck is very stiff and I'm not feeling good. And I was like, you had a crash. You feel like you concussed. And she's like, I don't know if I'm concussed, but. And she was like, I'm going to try craniosacral. And I was like, oh, amazing. Do it. You're going to feel better. Whatever. A week pass, go back to the same sushi place a week later. She's right there again. And I'm like, so how was it? And she's like, oh my God, I feel so much better. So I think, you know, there's things like that. Acupuncture can be good. I know that you do that.
Yeah, I had a really good experience with acupuncture, actually. Yeah. I've also learned that they don't do facial acupuncture for the general public unless you have a concussion.
Okay.
And I had an experience last week with it where I didn't have control of my body for like a full 30 minutes. My arms were just like moving, my toes were twitching, and there was nothing I could do about it. These things were just happening. It was my nervous system, I think they call it unwinding.
Yeah.
My nervous system was just like releasing all of these tension points that I had. I've never walked out of a clinic feeling so fluid in my life. My hip flexors were released.
Wow.
All the tension in my jaw, my neck, like the back of my head, gone.
And it's amazing. I think these things are super, being curious.
Yes.
Be open to try new things.
Did you think the microdosing helped?
I don't know. But I did not microdosing a mushroom. I did microdosing of antidepressant thing. I think it did, for sure. It probably helped. I was also doing like so many things at the same time that, woof, everything started to get better. But I stopped doing it after 6 weeks when I was like, okay, you know what? I'm doing all these things on the side that's really helping me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put that on the medicine on the side and I'm not going to do it anymore. And I still, you know, kept on getting better. What the way the doctor explained me the microdosing antidepressant thing, it really rebalances the chemicals in your brain. Like she was like, your chemicals are probably all over the place right now. And you just need that for a little while where everything bloop is going to be balanced and you're going to feel more even. Mm-hmm. And that's what it did.
For those wondering, when you concuss yourself, basically what you're doing to your brain is it no longer recognizes serotonin for a while. And what the antidepressants do is allows the serotonin to interweave itself back into the synapses in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I did the same thing. I'm unsure if it helped.
Yeah.
But the fact that I feel better.
It's not something that you notice, like you don't feel high at all. There's none of that at all. You just for me, I felt like, okay, well, I'm noticing that I'm not having these crazy mood swings anymore. Mm-hmm. So and that was the goal. Mm-hmm. So I'd say it worked.
Did you learn patience during this, do you think?
For sure.
Do you think it helped?
Yeah, like, well, patient. I think like through all injuries, like being patient is key. Like you can't rush the problem. The body is that's the thing.
No.
The body is the body, and it's gonna take the time it needs. Like I think the first time I really learned patience through injury is when I did my knee a few years back, 2019, and I was really in my head. I had the surgery. I think it was mid-July or something. And every doctor, surgeon, physio, everybody was like, Johan, it's going to take 9 months to 1 year until you are back on your bike. I did ACL, MCL, meniscus. They're like, it's going to take 9 months to 1 year until you are back on your bike and it's going to feel good, like no big deal. And then in my head, I was like, you know what? I'm Johan Barilly. I'm an athlete and it's going to take me 6 months.
Didn't we ride then very recently after you would have had that surgery? 2019?
No.
Am I getting my years mixed up?
But 2019 is the year of Crankworx when you really hurt yourself. But at the end, I was on crutches. That was Crankworx, on crutches, not riding.
Oh, no, I met you at the Dakine party afterwards.
Yeah, that's correct. We met at the Dakine party.
Yep, that's correct.
I could not ride. I could not do anything for a long time, for 9 months to six to a year.
Because mountain biking is very physically demanding.
Yeah.
And the want to get back in the gym and start rehab and spin bike and do all those things, you can't do that with a concussion.
No.
There's a period where you have to wait.
Yes, exactly.
Because you can't have your heart rate above a certain threshold.
You're right. That was actually pretty hard to be patient with that because really that's true. With concussion, there is a period of time where you can't do anything. You really, you can't do anything.
No.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I was starting to feel, now looking back at that, Crankworx, super busy Crankworx. I was there almost every day and I started to feel like poo poo. And then after I got that machine.
I found the not doing extremely isolating.
Yes.
I find it extremely isolating.
It's longer.
Because you get injured in the summer or the fall.
Yeah.
Or the spring. It's beautiful outside.
I know.
All you want to do is go outside and be active to some degree.
Yeah.
But instead you're at home. Man, my muscle atrophy in the first 3 weeks was crazy.
Yeah.
I like fit into a bunch of my old clothes. So I was like, this is wild. Like I need to do something. But all of the medical advice is sit still, don't move.
And don't do anything. Like some people actually, they recommend to like be in the dark room with nothing. It's kind of getting away from that actually. They don't really recommend this kind of stuff anymore.
No.
That was the early days of concussions. But I think now they actually recommend, yes, to stay in like quiet. Like I definitely could not like noise, crowd. I could not be like very low dose.
I couldn't form a sentence past like 15 words, I think, for the first 2 weeks.
And then
And my brain would just turn off and I would be like, I need a nap.
Yeah. Steve actually sent me a clip. Like I think a couple of weeks after he came to my place to film a little interview for his documentary that he's filming. And he just sent me a clip recently. I'm like, oh my God, I actually don't remember. I don't recall any of that.
No.
this is wild. Cool. I don't remember.
No, it's man, the first couple of weeks afterwards, trying to recall things that I did, nothing.
Nothing.
Couldn't tell you what I did.
Yeah.
I watched Rampage. That was the first thing I remember doing. And it took all of my energy to be able to watch the screen for 3 hours.
Yeah, I do. Like the full July. There was a full month of July that went by and I don't actually remember anything. Anyways.
Scary.
it's
bad. What's one thing that you wish more mountain bikers and sports people in general knew about the mental side of recovering from a head injury?
What's one thing that I wish people knew?
Or what's one piece of advice that you would give people? They sustain a head injury. What's the first thing they should do?
Be patient. Like really respect it. Be patient. And also seek help. Like don't hesitate to go see a doctor. Talk to, depending on your accident, talk to a counselor to like do things for you and to make that thing recover, because it's really treated like a, like my doctor said, Johan, if you break your arm, what are you going to do? You're going to go to the doctor.
Straight away.
They're going to might do a surgery or something and they're going to cast you and you're going to have to wait and be patient. Same with the brain.
Most important muscle in your body.
Yeah. And then we have one brain. If the brain is cooked, it doesn't work anymore.
No.
Yeah. So it's important.
Moving on to your return to mountain biking.
Yeah.
Did you have any mindset shifts or approaches that you changed from how you would have previously ridden post-concussion? How did you approach getting back on the bike and returning to trails and returning to the bike park?
I think that, I think like now I will listen more to, you know, like those little voice in the head that's telling you, maybe you should have a little snack right now and take a little break. Like I will listen to that more. Like I've always been someone that's like easily I can say no to something and be like, you know what, today, poof, I'm not feeling that, I'm not doing it. Like I'm always no problem at all for me to say that. But now I will do it more. But then now also, I think that there is definitely one thing that has shifted is that there is some stuff that I know that I will never do. and I'm very happy with it.
River Gaps? You don't have a good history with River Gaps.
The River Gap, yeah. Well, it depends. If the takeoff is nicely built and it's like kind of something that I really see and understand and stuff, no problem at all. But for example, the Onza big drop in Squamish, I will never do that. Success rate is too low. The Toonie drop in Vancouver, same thing. Success, like now I can actually see, I measure the success rate. I'm like, okay, what's the success rate of this feature in the history of this feature in percent? Like, are we like around like 80% success rate? Or are we more like 20% success rate or around that? If it's below 50, I would definitely, I'm like, this is too risky.
So your risk assessment has changed.
My risk assessment has completely. Like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, like a low success rate of a move also means that the move is not necessarily well built and is too risky for no reason. So for me, if the move is too risky for no reason, I'm not doing it. Like, if there's no, I'm turning 40 this year, I don't give a shit.
Like, I don't care.
And so that's why I'm like, now, you know, like before my crash, the Toonie drop, I might have like, you know, like on a good day, a bit of energy and feeling it, I might have been like, you know what? Let's get it. But like right now, I'm happy to say no. I would never do it.
It's still very much on my list. It's one that has eluded me for a long time.
And it's on the list of many people.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I posted a funny video the other day on Instagram of like pretending that I did it and then Steve actually missed the shot. That was the funny thing. So I'm actually like on the landing sideways and then celebrating. Never did the jump. And then someone sent me a message, or many people actually, and they were like, oh, like it's on my list, I'm going to do it and stuff. And I was like, well, good luck with that. Not me.
Did you have to set small realistic goals for yourself returning to biking, or did you just kind of get on and then slowly ramp the percentage as you went? I know for someone who's been riding a bike for a long time, I'm better at riding a bike than I am walking, and I crash a lot. Yes. So that's saying something. But but do you take baby steps coming back, or do you just kind of feel it out as you go?
It was really baby steps. Like, I really went chill and then kind of ramping up when I felt like it was the time to do it. Like, for me, the shift that happened is around Christmas this year. So all of that before Christmas, like, I was really conservative. We went to Mexico with Nate, and usually I'm like really riding fast and like charging and finding gaps with him and stuff. And then this time I was like, you know what? There's no rush for me to do anything right now. There's no pressure. And it was really around Christmas where we were talking with some friends about like the race in Valparaiso last year and watching footage, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I kind of want to do it again, and then it happened, and then boom, all of a sudden I was invited again, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do Valparaiso. It's in 2 months, and I need to train for that. So last year it was my first time doing it, and I really focused my prep on the physical aspect, so going to the gym, doing interval trainings, like really feeling strong, but I didn't ride my bike at all. And my goal was to train as hard as I could to get fit and to be able to last a 2-2.5 minute kind of sprint down the hill, no problem. And the thing that happened last year is that I went there and I was really, mentally very intimidated by the gnarliness of the thing.
Yeah, the streets are narrow.
Yes. And then when I got invited this year, I was like, and the things are big. You know, it's narrow, it's fast, the gaps are big, and it's kind of, if you come short on some stuff, you're gonna break yourself. There's no way around it. And then this year I was like, okay, well, I haven't done any gnarly features since my crash. So whoop, like 6-7 months ago. And I need to get back into a place where I'm starting to get comfortable with the uncomfortable. So that's why the full January was actually perfect for biking. Yeah. There was no snow, like the dirt was good in the Sea to Sky. And I really took the full month of January to ride as much gnarly features in Squamish as I could. And getting back to that process of like looking at the line, understanding the physics of it, the speed, the pops, the body dynamics, the everything, and then going to that place where, okay, well, now I'm on my bike and I'm about to do this thing. What's the mental process now to let go of the fears and the self-doubt and everything? And it's been great. Like, and I really took it step by step. I was like, okay, well, my first feature is going to be this one. And then after this one, I'm going to do this one. And then after this one, I'm going to do this one. And I'm really following a methodical kind of process. And it's been great. And then so far, I really... The only actually mental blockages that I have is a very steep takeoff, big boulders. And I found myself sometimes kind of blocking in some of them where I'm like, holy fuck, I can't, you know, pass the point of commitment point and releasing and be like, okay, I'm going. Like, I found a few blockages in that, but at the same time, there's none of that in Valparaiso. So, so I'm okay.
Is that one from your Fiesta crash, maybe?
Maybe, probably. You know what? I was actually talking to Max and Nate about it. And Max, we actually did a sesh with Max the week before he went to Freeride Fiesta and he broke himself, poor guy. And I was like, I think it's due to my crash in at Freeride Fiesta. Mm-hmm. And then now with my crash that I, you know, like the next crash, and it, like I definitely have a mental blockage. So I need to kind of pass that.
2025 summer, Johan on a dirt jumper.
Or like just a bike park, mm-hmm. like A-line, crabs, just getting mm-hmm. comfortable.
So you think Valparaiso was like your first big milestone where you were like, okay, I feel like I'm back to summer previous.
Exactly. But at the same time, you know, like I'm going to Valpo, and if there is anything in Valpo that I'm like, I'm really hesitant and I'm not really feeling it, then... it's fine. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to wreck myself for a race. It's fine. I'm totally comfortable with being like, this is too far. This is too beyond what I can do right now. And I'm okay. I'm okay with it.
Did you feel any pressure to come back earlier than you should have? Or was everyone pretty sponsorships? I'm talking mainly coaching, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Was it pretty accepted that everyone was like, hey, Johan, take your time? Or was there pressure for people to be like expecting you back?
No. And then I think none of the brands actually really pushed me in any ways. And then another thing is that I'm also really like proactive with brands and really transparent with the things sometimes, you know, like going through and stuff. And then as I was sharing with my audience, I was also sharing with my sponsor and being like sending emails and be like, hey guys, this is where I'm at right now, but this is what I'm working on the side. And everybody, really, all the brands, they saw the crash. Huh? They all knew, like even without me reaching out to them, they all, like when they saw the crash, they all reached out to me and be like, Johan, like really take your time. There's no pressure from our side to like have you be back on the bike. So it was really nice in a way.
How did you feel like your first few rides back? Did you have like a big release? Was it like all the stress and like anxiety and all the like build up? Did that all go instantly or was it, you know, ramp up again? Did it happen slowly?
It happened slowly. And the only reason why is because my hand was really an issue at the beginning and I could not last like 20 seconds without taking a break. And I couldn't really hold my handlebars at the beginning. It was really bad. So I had to kind of actually figure out a few things. Like I used to ride with, I think, 31 millimeter diameter grips. And then I went to bigger grips, 33 millimeter, because my finger doesn't really close completely. So having a thicker grips, I have more grip strength. And same thing with my brake levers. They are a little bit more pushed further than they used to be. It's just a few little tweaks that I did with my cockpit, like a little softer suspensions as well that I used to ride as well, a bit more sensitivity on the, you know, like more...
supple.
Yeah, more gentleness.
More gentle. I wouldn't call your riding gentle, Jan.
Gentle.
Because I'm coming up to that point now where...
You might have to adjust a few things.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm more like... the mental and emotional side of it, I'm not intimidated by, but I'm definitely wary of it because I haven't touched my bike in 5 months and I think it's going to be quite overwhelming.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
I rode my bike to my house is 200 meters from the gym.
Yeah.
Or my old house. I rode from my house to the gym one day and it was like euphoric. But then I was in the gym and then my knee started hurting and the universe was like, chill out. Yeah. It was like...
The funny thing is that I actually felt at the beginning when I was starting biking, I felt the most joy climbing.
Hmm.
Like climbing up the hill. I was like so, so happy. Going down the trail, it was quite frustrating because I was struggling a bit more. Like I was like kind of going slow and stopping and
make lots of mistakes.
Yeah, mistakes and not be, you know, like taking breaks and not feeling like it was more frustrating in a way. Mm-hmm. So I had to actually like really lower my expectations, be like, you know what, Johan, it's fine. Just chill out. You're on your bike. You're in the forest. You're happy. And it's going to come back. It's all good. But the first few rides, I remember being like actually worried. I was like, ooh, like I really can't ride right now. But climbing up the hill, I was like, this is so good.
I find climbing quite meditative. Yeah. I think that's why I get more stressed in the summer because I climb less.
Yeah.
But in the fall and the spring, and I climb so much. I do all my deep thought while I'm climbing.
Yeah.
And then I get to the top of the trail and I just leave it all there. Yeah. And then I go ride and it's really meditative. And I'm like, oh, this is great. And then I don't have it in the summer and I'm lacking it now.
Like biking is really a kind of a meditative thing. Eh?
Absolutely.
It really recalibrates and balances like all the things in the brain. It's really it's amazing.
Good dopamine.
Good dopamine.
It is good dopamine.
Yeah.
I noticed recently, I guess this is about a month ago now, on your Instagram that you have been working on your mentality and how you approach features and finding confidence in features again. Are there specific mental exercises or routines that you use now to help you deal with fear and anxiety when you're riding?
Breath work.
All breath work.
Yeah, like it's crazy actually with the breath, you can really regulate your nervous system completely. Like if you want your energy to go up, you can do it with your breath. If you want to calm yourself, you can do it with your breath. So really, like for me, the breath is super important. That's something that I always done, even with racing without really knowing it. Like I always worked with before the start of a race, like really like ramping up if I need to calm down. Really, you calm yourself down now. Mm. Like if you need the energy ramp up, you like strong breath out, like and you ramp up. With really going back to like gnarlier features, the breath is very important to do that, to regulate the fear and everything. The fear, like there's always like people, a question that comes back to me when I do coaching, people always ask me, How are you not scared anymore? And I always tell them the fear is always here. Like the fear is never going to leave. Like if you are not scared doing the things we do, you should go consult a doctor. It's not good. You should go seek help. Because the fear is actually, the fear is good. Like it's actually for me, it tells me that, okay, I'm in danger here. There's dangerous situation. And I need to be on my A game. My focus needs to be high. My determination needs to be high. My energy needs to be high. Everything needs to boom. My understanding of the line needs to be boom, 100%. My commitment, 100%. Everything needs to go up. So basically, it's a sign for me that, okay, this is a warning. I need to be focused on the game plan. And the game plan is the full thing of like, going down the line, walking through the bottom, going back up, having all my visual points. From here, I'm going to go here. From here, I'm going there. From there, I'm going there. This is the speed that I'm going to do. This is where I'm braking. This is where I'm releasing the brakes. This is what I'm doing here. This is understanding what I'm going to do with my body. Like really putting all the physics and everything together. And then when the fear comes in, repeating that game plan is going to bring me through the present moment. if I just stay in the fear is going to tell you what can go wrong. So it's good to know what can go wrong. But at some point, it's good to push it to the side and focusing on exactly what you need to execute. So going through that mental process, super important, but knowing what's the mental process, what's the, actually the process to do that, regulating yourself through the breath, and at some point, if you feel it, then it's go time.
Do you think visualization helps for sure. with that as well?
But visualization is like when I'm thinking about my process, okay, for me, I'm doing this, it's visualization. I'm visualizing myself completely executing the move the way I want it to happen. So it's completely visualization.
Do you think fear has impacted the way you enjoy mountain biking? Or do you feel like it has added a new layer of maybe the way you respect what you do, how you assess risk?
Mm-hmm. I think more the second.
More the second?
Yeah, the fear has added an element of kind of awareness and then knowing that, the fear is never going to leave. Mm-hmm. But then you don't want to let the fear like hit you. You don't want to take the fear, to let the fear block you completely. You actually want to acknowledge the fear, accept it. The fear is here. Okay, woo. Hi, nice to meet you. Nice to see you again. But let's be friends. Let's work together. So it's actually a cool, it's good. It's a lot of learning.
So you think your riding now is maybe not less risk averse, or more risk averse, I should say, but you just have a better relationship.
Definitely.
With it.
Yeah.
And how you approach it.
More, exactly. More, more of a process again. And and then at some point, like same thing, eh? Like if the fear is really there and then you're like completely, that's the only thing you can see, then it's not good. Like of course, acknowledge that as well and be like, okay, this is not the day.
I heard a really great analogy for fear the other day. And it's if you were to approach a body of water and it was a mile wide, but only an inch deep, you would think that it's a massive ocean and it's going to consume you.
Yeah.
But that's fear.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is take the plunge and realize it only comes up to your ankles and then you're totally fine. Do you have that mindset with fear, or do you approach it differently?
In what way?
In like, do you ever struggle, say, taking the plunge? Or are you really like, you acknowledge it if it's overwhelming, but if you can manage it, you go ahead?
If I can manage, exactly. If I can manage it, if I can really put it to the side a little bit and really focused on the present and understanding the full thing, then yes. If the energy can go up and I'm like, okay, now it's go time. I understand the thing. Let's go. Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. If it's too much, it's too loud and it doesn't go away, then okay, I respect it. Mm-hmm. Let's leave it here and let's think about it. Mm-hmm. Usually, sometimes it does that. Huh? So you're going to do something for the first time and you're not sure. Like when we build something, like for example, when we rebuild the Lily Gap over there, the day we went filming, you were there. Huh? Mm-hmm. That thing, we completely built it. We measured it with our eyes.
I was going to say there was no tools.
It was just a complete approximate kind of like physics. Okay, we're going to go from this at this speed. We're going to land on this rock right here. And then from here, we are going to jump on this platform at the bottom. But the first time you're going to do it, you have no idea if it's going to work. No.
blind faith.
It's a bit... Talking about that, actually, the funny story is that the day before, I was with Jolan, who helped me build the thing. And then we are on the side of it and I'm looking at it and I'm like, I think our landing is too high. It's not going to work. And we had to cut the legs of the landing a foot to pull it a bit lower. And I'm glad we did because otherwise it didn't work.
We filmed that at, 5 in the morning that next day. And we all had some places to be at 8 o'clock. And we're all like, well, we all want to ride it a couple of times. And it was kind of like, well, it's now or never.
Yeah.
It's here. People are going to hit it.
It was but then that thing, same, you know, at some point, of course, but we went through the full process of like building it and getting to know it. And like your vision is different. Mm-hmm. And at some point you're like, okay, I'm on top of this thing. I understand it. Like I've been there, you know, like I've processed it many, many times. I have had maybe like 3-4 nights before it where I didn't sleep at all because I was just like consumed and scared as well. I didn't sleep a lot the few nights before it.
I've wanted to hit that feature since...
Since I moved to Canada.
Before. I think I saw that in a movie when I was like 16 or 17. Yeah. And I was like, one day I was like, I have to hit that feature. And being 31 or 32 when I hit it, that's like a big span of years.
It's a big chunk.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's another topic. You know, we've grew up, and you are from Australia, I'm from France, and we grew up watching all these movies. Mm-hmm. All like Richie Schley, TP, Wade Seaman.
All the Coastal Boys.
All the Coastal Boys, like so many freeride legend, because really freeride, that's where it kind of started. Eh? Yep. Like really the essence of freeride was here. And we've seen all these things, you know, on movies. And we moved here. We moved here. And then 10 years ago until kind of recently, the freeride scene here was kind of like a little bit dead.
Nothing.
It was kind of...
Everyone was racing.
A bit dead. Yeah, exactly. Everybody was racing. And the freeride scene was a bit dead. And all of a sudden, like for me, it's really when I stopped racing, like 2019, 2020... I started coaching, I stopped racing, that all of a sudden I realized, I was like, okay, well, now I have all the time in the world and I'm not training to race. And I started to look around and be like...
Yeah, the stuff is right here.
It's right here.
It's right there.
It's right there. And I always seen this thing, like, you know, like going training in Pemberton, driving on the highway and seeing like the relics of wood and being like, oh my God, like this thing is here. Like it's crazy. Like I've watched this thing before and it's here. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, let's rebuild it.
Yeah, we should.
And it's like, it's not by appropriation of the thing. It's actually to make these things like be born again.
I was just happy to experience it.
Yeah.
Because I always watched them and I was like, that's peak mountain biking for me.
Exactly. And to honor them and be like, sure. You know what? Let's ride them all. Let's do them. And then at the same time, when we started to rebuild all these things, the amount of riders that started to do them as well. Mm. And that's the most beautiful thing. Like back in the days, you know, there was like maybe just like Richie doing one and then TP doing like a few on his side and then Wade Seaman same and then the other guys same. But then now it's like, okay, well, you rebuild the feature and then all of a sudden you have 30 people that are able to do it.
The level has gone up.
And the level is going up. Yeah. And and that's beautiful, beautiful to see and beautiful to honor as well.
Yeah.
Which is cool. On trail bikes.
I think what was the gnarliest? I'm doing stuff on my 140 mil bike.
Yeah.
Like that I have no business doing on my 140.
And if it's well built, it works well.
Yeah.
Like we've done Tour de Nard on like enduro bikes, really. Yeah.
I think suspension is the reason we're there.
The bikes have really, really evolved.
Oh, yeah.
The technology is definitely way better than what it was when they were doing that.
Which makes it again, so much gnarlier.
Exactly. Like huge respect even more.
Oh, man.
And, but yeah.
Looking back, is there anything in your recovery that you wish you had done differently? Things you had done sooner, maybe things you wish you hadn't had done at all?
I think all, came, I'd say, at the right moment. You know, like even if I waited a bit too long to really like take care of my concussion and seek help and everything. I think it came at the right moment because I needed to experience like the dark places to really understand it now. And also to have the experience now to help people if they go through it as well. Mm. So I don't think I regret anything. Happy with the process, happy where I'm at now. Like I have no concussion symptoms are gone. Like I'm feeling good. Like I'm feeling good on my bike. You know, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. Like my brain is actually, I've really pretty much stopped drinking. I'm not consuming any alcohol really since Christmas. And that's another thing, like goal setting, mm-hmm. having a goal. Mm-hmm. Like I really felt at some point, I was like, I need goals in my life to be healthy and everything. And I really felt like I need that. I'm turning 40 this year. And I feel like more than ever, I think taking care of myself and my health is super important. And having goals is super important. And I don't know where I'm going with that, but...
Well, I think it's pretty common for mountain bikers. I'm guilty of this. I've done it before.
Yeah.
You get injured. You really take care of yourself.
And then you get
back to peak. And then you're like, oh, sweet, I'm back. All the self-help goes out the window and you're just back to the same old.
Exactly.
And then you end up in the same place and you just go through the cycle.
It's true. Yes. And then, yes, I was going to say, yes. So goal setting really helped me to have a very good lifestyle. I wake up every morning at 6 a.m. and I do like 15, 20 minutes of meditation breath work. And I don't drink anymore. And I used to like smoke a little bit of weed here and there. I'm not doing that at all since Christmas at all, completely. I cut a little bit of sugar as well. I cut gluten, all these things. And I'm really feeling that my brain is actually working way better than what it was before the concussion, which is amazing.
Because it's getting the actual nutrients that it's needing.
And probably, like I'm actually not sabotaging myself.
Yeah, sugar especially. Sugar is the worst one.
Sugar, and I think alcohol is bad as well.
It's full of like sugar.
It's bad, all the things we do in society that we think like it's normal to do it to fit in and stuff, but it's also easy to be like going at the party and be like, you know what, I'm going to drink a zero beer and I'm happy about it. Mm-hmm.
Zooming out a little bit, back to the community.
Yeah.
Do you think that people, their mindsets and the language surrounding injuries needs to change? Do you think people's perspective on injuries needs to change? Miranda posted that great article. She elaborated in an article, but she posted that great Instagram post being like, hey, let's take a second here. Injuries aren't just nothing. Do you think that is the industry's opinion of it? Or do you think most people are still on the, oh, I got injured, I'll be back in 6 weeks, it's nothing major. Like, we just went through a pretty heavy period of events and I ran out of fingers and toes
to count
how many people were injured in January.
And that's just the beginning
of the season. In February, and we're not even 2 months into the year.
Yeah. I definitely agree with Miranda's post. And of course, as we said earlier, of course, like injuries are part of the game and they are part of the sport. But does it mean that they are they don't need to be diminished? And they don't need to be, how do you say?
Like, people are allowed to take the time. Yes. Not even allowed, they should. You're entitled to it. It's your body.
Exactly. They should take the time. And we should actually... I think there is as earlier we were talking about it. I think as a rider and as an athlete, it's also our process, you know, to be like... The language has to change. Mm-hmm. The injuries are here, for sure. They are not going to go away. But the language has to change in a way that, okay, right now I'm suffering from this and I'm injured. I will be okay. Mm-hmm. Not saying like too early, I'm okay, I'm fine.
Yeah.
It's all good. I just broke my back.
Yeah. Like you're not fine.
You're not fine. Just got hurt, your adrenaline is still up, but you're going to go through some really not super good places, mm-hmm. and you're not fine.
Yeah, your back is broken. You're not fine. You were a couple centimeters or an extra G-force away from being paralyzed.
Femur, like there has been so many like really, really, really gnarly injuries since the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Hardline, natural selection, fiesta, pretty much big events where it's the some of the best riders in the world. And it's gnarly. That's a sign, again, that the sport is very, it's gnarly. And at some point, when you're going to crash doing this kind of stuff, there's no way around it. You are going to break yourself. There's no way around it.
Do you think that's a factor of the industry pushing to make things bigger and bigger? Or is that just people are... I had this point raised to me the other day, which I found quite fascinating. Mm-hmm. Now that we have a massive summer season in the Southern Hemisphere and a massive summer season in the Northern Hemisphere, no one has an off season. No one's taking 4 or 5 months to go back to the gym, recover, get strong, do the plyometrics, like do the breath work, take the time, meditate. Yeah. They just go for honestly years at a time. I think before my crash, I was like 2 years, no winter.
Yeah.
I just biked as much as I could all the time.
That's
like
a good
event,
point.
event. And then you come back and the bike park opens and then it's events and then you film and then you go away and then you're in Queenstown in January. Yeah. Where do you see the balance?
That's actually a very, very good point because I remember when I was racing, like we used to finish the season, let's say late in October. And I was like starting, let's say season in end of March in Chile or Argentina when we had these races early April and then all the way till October. But we will take October, November, December, January, February, no racing at all to prepare. And then at least a full like 4 or 5 weeks completely off.
Nothing, no biking.
Just
go for a pedal.
Yeah, with your buddies doing some jumps or whatever. But really, the off season was the off season. It was not another race season. And that's also another thing. And then one thing that I was talking about with some friends is that, like right now, we have some very very gnarly events in the South Hemisphere, and in Europe, Canada, the US, it's the middle of winter. Like we are like deep in winter right now. So there's no riding. Like right now, today we went shooting, but that was the first time we were able to ride a little bit because there's still snow everywhere and it's icy, it's super sketchy, but we were not able to ride at all for 3 weeks.
Yep.
At all.
Yep.
Completely.
Yep.
So if I'm right here in the middle of winter and all of a sudden I have to go race in Chile, which I'm going to do.
No practice.
Oops.
Hey guys, I've done 3 days of biking this
Oopsie.
Year. Yeah.
But I'm going to Costa Rica before for a camp, so I'm going to be biking a bit.
Yeah, but only for a week.
But yeah.
And then you're going to go full tilt on a street course.
And then I'm going to go full tilt on the street. That's why I'm saying that, you know, like if it feels too much, it's okay. Like I'm fine. I will hang out with the crowd.
Yeah.
It's all good. But yeah, I think that's a very good point for all these riders and then World Cup racers that are, boom, they are racing hardline in January. Like, yeah, maybe it's good to take a little break here and there.
For sure. The racers have had, you know, October, November, December, most of January. I know a lot of the guys go for team camps in January. It's kind of when their year starts.
That's when it starts.
So they start.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is like not just the riding, but your body isn't used to the impacts and the stress and the muscle strain and like the impacts. And I wonder if the people just need to be a bit more cognizant of that and just be like, hey, I need to have an off season.
The other thing is the like things are getting faster and bigger. Faster and bigger and earlier. That's really where everything is going. The World Cup circuit is faster. Hardline is getting bigger. Now you have natural selection. And if you look at the course was beautifully built, but there was no protection at all anywhere.
Nothing.
nothing.
And you're in the wind on the hillside.
Like nothing. And then on the mountain.
Yeah.
Like high elevation. Yeah. It looked like I was not there, but it looks like it was pretty exposed terrain.
Yeah.
Which is, at the same time, you know, it's beautiful, but it's definitely pushing the sport for sure. But at the same time, the riders, you know, they want to do it. Like we all want to do it. So for sure, at some point, we're going to have to find like some sort of a middle ground and being like, maybe we should, I don't know, like skiing. If you look at skiing, freeride skiing, at some point, they were all like hugging the biggest cliffs ever. And they were really like compressing their backs completely. And they had to turn it down a little bit and doing more tricks on the smaller stuff.
I don't know. I watched the Golden Round last week and it didn't really look like anybody was chilling out.
In
Kicking Horse.
No. Marcus was not chill at all.
No, none of those guys were.
No. No, and I think that, again, that's the new, Marcus is the new generation, huh? Like, he's what?
Toby Rafford?
20?
Toby Rafford did like a 70-foot Lincoln loop off nothing. You couldn't even see where he was going, and then all of a sudden he was upside down.
Yeah, I think, I don't know.
Those guys are crazy for me. For sure. That's nothing all
ever. And what do you know, with the Freeride World Tour, like something that they should actually film more, so we really, because you see the runs. You see the live and you see the runs and everything. But the thing that for me is completely out of mind is that they don't practice.
Blind.
It's blind.
They get 2 days to look at it with binoculars. With
binoculars.
And then you don't know what it looks like coming up there. No. You don't know what's under the snow. Wei Tian got his ski clipped trying to take an exit.
Yes.
And you don't know. You don't know until you're on it. And then these guys are hucking cork sevens, double flips, like
huge gaps.
Huge stuff. Blind.
That for me, that's crazy.
That's the gnarliest part of the tour for me, for sure.
Like how it would be interesting, like just to know, you should have Marcus on your podcast.
Oh, I'll wait for those guys to finish the season.
Just so they really like talk through the process and how they feel when they are in the start gate on the top of that mountain. Because the funny thing is that Owen, my stepson, did a comp in Golden in Kicking Horse, maybe 3 weeks before the Freeride World Tour. And they did the comp on the mountain on the left side, which was way smaller for the, you know, like U15 and stuff, way smaller. And on the right side, that's where they did the Freeride World Tour.
Mm.
And the mountain is huge.
Yeah, it's massive. And it's straight down.
Yeah, but when you see like Marcus, like it would take me like 5 minutes to go down. When you see like Marcus, he was top to bottom. 20 seconds, yeah. He was done.
Done.
You're like, okay.
Flip, cork seven, big three.
Done.
Straight line off a quick 60-footer.
100 kilometers an hour.
Yeah,
done. Yep. See ya.
Crazy. One thing I will say about that is having learned some new tricks in the last 12 months and then being like, okay, I'm going to find the biggest doubles I can to do flat spin, 360 backflip, whatever. Yeah. 90% of the time, as long as the technique is good, it works out.
Yeah.
Because you can see where you're going. But the risk for those guys is like a whole level up.
Because
we're at ground level the whole time for the most part. Yeah. And like even if you're in the air on a jump, you're coming down on a landing. Yeah. You for the most part, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Those guys are on such gnarly exposure.
Oh, it's insane.
It's insane.
Like you land, you take off slightly more to the left and then you're going to land on a rock.
Or a cliff or hit a tree and then bounce.
I don't quite process that.
What's the most rewarding part for you having gone through this experience? How's it shaped you? How do you approach mountain biking now? What are you grateful for?
I think the full thing was it's always like my full life, huh? Like the full, it's a roller coaster, you know, everything. It's like life is not just like on the way up like that. There is up and down. And then usually again in the sports and competition and the sport we do, it's usually we learn the most when we are struggling, when you are injured or when you don't succeed at your goals. That's when usually you take the time to think and process and you learn a lot and you grow a lot. So I think that through that injury, I've learned a lot and I processed many things. I've reshaped my life and my career and everything, my mindset. And I think it's been amazing. Again, super lucky because I'm able to do the thing I love right now, which is riding my bike, and I'm healthy. And so I'm super, super lucky and grateful for that. And being able to take my bike and ride with my friends and even on my own. And it's, very fortunate.
What's one piece of advice that you would give any other person going through a similar injury, concussion, recovery period? What's one thing you would say to them to focus on and help them through this?
Focus on the little steps. Focus on all the little steps and then really just celebrate the little victories. It's very important. Like be proud of all the little steps, even if they are small. Actually focus on those ones because that's the ones that make you go all the way up to the end goal.
1% every day.
1% every day.
Dude, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
This was really fun.
It was cool.
In closing, what excites you right now? We want to hear what you're up to.
Many things.
Straight back to it.
Many, many things, actually. Where to start? Well, first of all, coaching. We are planning a bunch of camps with Nate. We used to do a bunch of private coaching, but we've kind of stepping away from that, and we've really realized that we are having a blast sharing experiences with a lot of people. And so that's why we're focusing on camps, to get groups of people and get the stock and really share our passion for it and really help people to become better riders. So we have a full lineup of camps for the season. One with Aaron Gwynn in Tennessee, Performix, Todd, Sunshine Coast and Squamish. We have one in Calgary with the guys from the Inside Line shop over there. Mexico, Oaxaca. I'm going to Costa Rica for a camp this week actually. Peru, we have a bunch of different areas to reach maximum people. And some community camps also that I'm going to do here in the Sea to Sky, some free coaching clinics that I'm going to do. And one project that I'm really pumped about is that with DaVinci, we're starting a development team. And we have three young riders. I can't tell more right now, but we have three young riders that we are going to help develop and maybe help bring to the World Cup circuit at some point.
That's cool.
That's super cool. And man, just some, yeah, personal goals, Valparaiso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Dude, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Matt.
See you soon.
It was a blast. Peace out.